Order, please stand for the pledge.
Of the United States of America.
Republic for which it stands.
One nation, under God.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Volusia County School Board meeting. Today is Tuesday, May 17th. It is 5 o'clock. And so first we'll start off by introducing everyone here at the dais. We'll start on the right-hand side. We have our amazing agency clerk, Ms. Erin Lieben. Next to Ms. Lieben, we have Mrs. Anita Burnett, representative for District 2. Next to Ms. Burnett, we have Vice Chairwoman Jamie Haynes, representing District 1. Next to Ms. Haynes, we have Rachel Hazel, our superintendent. Over here on the left-hand side, we have Mr. Carl Persis, representative for District 4. Next to Mr. Persis, we have Mrs. Linda Cuthbert, representative for District 3. Next to Ms. Cuthbert, we have Mr. Ted Doran, board attorney. And I am Ruben Colon, and I have the pleasure and honor of serving as the chair this year. We have one item on our agenda today, which is the approval of the negotiated contract with Dr. Carmen Balgman 2.01. Mr. Persis, would you like to give us an introduction?
Mr. Doran.
I mean, Mr. Persis can if you want to, but I would, you know.
Mr. Doran.
I would yield my time to the.
Thank you for yielding your time, yes.
Yield this time.
Thank you.
Yes, I have to admit you threw me on that one. Okay. Yes, I would love to give an introduction and overview. All right, so to take us back to the beginning, as we all remember, the board unanimously approved by motion, second, and vote the selection of Dr. Carmen Balgobin to serve as superintendent for a 3-year term subject to contract negotiations. The board then directed the chairman, Ruben Colon, to negotiate the contract and, of course, for me to be involved for purposes of preparing the document to memorialize whatever terms were in the agreement reached between the two of them. We met for 3.5 hours by Zoom on Friday, and there was a lot of give and take, a lot of conversation, and out of all of that, I worked with my staff all day Saturday to produce the document that has been previously posted to the agenda and was provided to all the board members the first thing Monday morning, which was the first time that I had had an approval from both the chairman and Dr. Balgman as to all of the language as it was written. In addition to providing the contract, we provided a side-by-side comparison. The board will remember, I'm sure, that it approved, for purposes of negotiation, a financial budgetary impact of not more than 3% more than the previous superintendent's contract. And based on the terms on the face of the agreements, the outcome actually, as you can see, is the contract negotiated with Dr. Balgobin is actually a 3.1% decrease in terms of budgetary impact on the face of the contracts by their terms. It's pretty obvious that what happened was Dr. Balgobin wanted and Chairman Cohen agreed to a higher base salary in return for a much more limited benefits package. And if you have any questions about this at the conclusion of my little talk here, we can go through, you know, how we arrived at these figures. I will mention, because it's not real clear on the face, the health insurance, the $12,100 assigned to Dr. Fritz is for health insurance for his family members. It did not include him. So although Dr. Balgobin will be getting, you know, the base health insurance that we provide to all of our employees, The $12,100 to make it an apples-to-apples comparison did not include any cost of insurance for Dr. Fritz. Going through the agreement and just hitting some highlights, as you can see, it sets forth the duties and responsibilities of the superintendent. This contract is a complete rewrite. It has provisions from our previous document. It also has many, many provisions from other superintendent's contracts from around the state and some provisions that I drafted just from scratch. But again, to touch on some highlights, Dr. Balgobin will be provided the use of an automobile. It's my understanding that all cabinet members are provided automobiles, and we have an automobile for her already in our inventory. And so she will receive no stipend for automobile use. Of course, she will not be allowed to use the automobile for any personal matters, subject to, as I put it in here, de minimis. Obviously, there's going to be opportunities where there's going to be short, very short, unscheduled trips that might be personal but wouldn't count toward the use of the vehicle. The term of the agreement runs for 3 years, starting on July 1 of 2022 and ending on June 30 of 2025. The superintendent, of course, is required to live in Volusia County, as has always been the case. And again, these are highlights, so I'm skipping over some of these provisions that are just kind of standard, like signing the oath of office. So let's talk about agreement renewal. So the way this agreement renewal works, it's a complete rewrite from what we had, and I think it's good. I think they did a good job of reaching an agreement on these points. Essentially, at the end of the three-year first term of this agreement, more specifically, 90 days prior to the last date of the third three-year term, the board really is required to do one of three things. It can either vote to renew and extend, it can decline to renew and extend, meaning that the contract would terminate on June 30, 2025, or it can do nothing, in which case the term will automatically be extended for an additional 3 years. At the end of that three-year period, should it occur, there will be a similar process where if the board does nothing, it will be extended for only 1 year, and it will continue forward that way in one-year increments unless the board votes to decline to extend it or votes to renew it for a specified term, meaning you could just vote to do an additional three-year term as opposed to doing nothing and just having it extended 1 year. Termination of the agreement, there is a termination without cause, which is, you know, the same thing we've gone through in the past with other superintendents. If the board, whoever it is composed of at the time, decides that they don't want to continue within any term of the agreement, meaning sometime before the end of the third year, or if it's extended 3 years, sometime before the end of the sixth year, if the board, by majority vote, with no reason whatsoever needed, decides to terminate the agreement without cause, then the superintendent is granted the 20 weeks severance pursuant to the statute and the statutory categories that are applicable for the payout in the severance would apply just as we have just gone through. If the school board pursues for cause termination, if it's not an instance of what's the word here? I'll see it in a second. But if it's not an instance of doing something really bad, misconduct as defined by Florida statutes, and those are all spelled out, if it's not that, if it's just that the board feels like the superintendent is not meeting the requirements as set forth here, then you have to give the superintendent 60 days notice to cure the problem. And then make a determination as to whether to move forward with a for-cause termination. If the superintendent decides at any point in the process that she is no longer interested in serving as superintendent, she is required to give a letter of resignation and provide a minimum of 60 days notice to the board of her intent not to provide services any further. The base salary is paid at $245,000 per year. And of course, the salary can be increased, and it will be increased by in every 12-month period, there will be a salary adjustment. Based on any increases that are given to administrators, and it cannot be any more than what the administrators as a whole receive as an increase. So if it's 2%, then she would receive 2%. There is a tax-sheltered annuity plan, just as we've had for as long as I can remember, some 20 years. That's based on 15% of her base salary at any point in the process in the term of the agreement. The relocation expenses are limited to $5,500. And I've given examples of what those expenses would be that she would be able to submit receipts and obtain reimbursement. If it is less than $5,500, then it is the lesser amount, of course, that she would receive. So it's not a flat amount or a fixed amount. There are other broad expenses, of course, that we have always provided to our superintendents related to being member of FADS and other organizations that superintendents around the state enjoy membership in and, quite frankly, serve, a great purpose for the district so that we stay in touch with the rest of the state and allow our superintendent to participate in all the myriad of issues that all school districts face over the course of time. Also, a budgeted amount for civic and community activity expenses. That would be, for instance, and we've always had this in the past, like a membership in Rotary or the Lions Club or whatever else, local community, to ensure that the superintendent stays active in the community and is in touch with all of your constituents. There is annual leave, which is standardized at 20 calendar days of vacation. And there is sick leave, one day per month of sick leave. And the question was raised appropriately by Mrs. Haynes about, is this, she wanted to make sure that the contract was written in a way that didn't allow for what occurred with Dr. Fritz, where he was not here very long, immediately went out for 7 months, and we had to port over a lot of days from his previous employment and fulfill the payment of those days so that he would be paid throughout his sick leave. This agreement does not allow for that. What it does allow for is what I understand, having talked to staff, what every other employee gets, which is a port over of 1 day of sick leave for every 1 day that is accrued while the employee is with the district. So anyone we hire from any other districts, all the way down, to, I guess, the lowest levels, they receive this same benefit by statute. And that was not the case with Dr. Fritz. So that is how we address that. I did a real rough calculation, and based on the number of hours that Dr. Balgobin has from other districts, it would take about 5 years for her to move all of her sick days from other districts to us, 100% moved over. So she would have to be with us for at least 5 years, give or take. I didn't get down, to the month or anything like that. But about 5 years before she would receive all of her sick days being ported over. Personal leave, six days as provided by statute, and, of course, all the holidays, which, all of our staff and all of our employees enjoy as well. Life insurance is the same as we have had for the last three superintendents, which is the equivalent life insurance on Dr. Balgobin's life, her naming the beneficiary, in an amount equal to roughly, her base salary. And then extended disability, again, same thing. We would provide some extended disability insurance, which, we confronted with Dr. Fritz because he had that policy. But, of course, the disability policy that we have provides for 6 months of being disabled before you even get one dime. So it is what it is, but that's what we're talking about. And here we're talking about the portability and then the medical examination. It was decided that to not have a medical examination annually, but to require that the medical examination be performed as a pre-employment condition at the expense of the district. And as before, there's some language that a physician of Dr. Balgobin's choosing has to put onto letterhead and indicate, it's very short and I'll read it, it is my opinion, after conducting a complete physical examination of Carmen Balgobin, that she is or is not physically capable of carrying out the duties of the superintendent. I will ensure that we accomplish that. That letter is protected as a public record. It will not be, distributed widely. But upon completion, I will make sure that all board members know that we have received that letter and that it is in our possession. There is an outline of goals, evaluations, so in the broadest sense, we're talking here about the primary goal being, of course, meeting the strategic plan. In addition, the language essentially says you all will create any other performance objectives and notify the superintendent of what those objectives are, and set the goals and ultimately do an annual evaluation. There is also a biannual evaluation that is to occur no later than January 31st. This is not a formal evaluation. It's not filling out a evaluation form like you would on the annual evaluation, but rather a more informal discussion and presentation by the superintendent of the activities that have been undertaken in the previous 6 months, with the board providing input and criticism if necessary on how things are going. It's a mid-year report card in effect. So that the superintendent would have the benefit of receiving the board's input 6 months into the year, so that we're not at the end of the year and then she's being told you didn't do something we wanted you to do. So this gives everybody an opportunity to take a look and see where we are and make sure that we're on track. Of course, there are procedures with discussions with individual board members and And those are kind of axiomatic anyway. I mean, that is what the law is, but it sets forth, you know, what the parameters are, and the superintendent runs the district, the board sets policy, the board has input, board members, but, you know, no board member can order the superintendent to undertake any individual activity outside the parameters of what board members do. The annual formal evaluation. So we talked a little bit about this. July, on or before July 31st. There was a lot of debate over what that date should be. Obviously, we have historically not strictly adhered to that date, with agreement of both the board and superintendent. That date has been moved periodically due to lack of data or lack of information or lack of time or maybe some other more pressing issue that's interfering with accomplishing it in what would be a timely fashion under the contract. And so, but the goal is to do it on or before July 31st, and Dr. Bagelman believes that all of the objective data from the state will be available on or before that date in enough time to conduct the evaluation. And there's a provision, as we have had in the past, if she wants to do some outside professional activities, this has been in every superintendent's contract, as long as she's spending her personal leave time or whatever time she has, vacation, to maybe give a speech somewhere or to present something to another district, she's free to do that. Otherwise, 100% of her time has to be devoted solely to the undertakings of the Volusia County School Board/District. And the remaining of these paragraphs are just standard boilerplate. They're important on occasion, but they're not substantive enough to actually discuss. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. But otherwise, that is the overview.
Thank you, Mr. Dorn. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we employ Dr. Carmen Balgobin as our superintendent for the next 3 years.
Based on the contract as presented?
Based on the contract as presented by Mr. Dorn. Thank you.
Thank you. Board, you've heard the motion. Do we have a second? Motion has been properly made by Ms. Cuthbert, seconded by Mr. Persis. We'll move on to public comment. First person up, Ms. Elizabeth Albert. Welcome. You're not in red.
See, Kelly picked it up. Good afternoon, Chairman Colon, board members, Interim Superintendent Hazel, and members of the audience. So 10:30 yesterday, I printed this out. I had a little bit of time to go through it, and I have some questions that I'd like to see if I could put out there to have some answers. Interesting, when we talked about the comparison or listened to the explanation about the comparison, knowing that the insurance that was paid for Dr. Fritz was not included in this, I think that this document needs to be updated and republished, because then this document would then be correct, and I don't feel that this is correct right now. And for the purposes of transparency, I'd like to suggest that we have this amended and made public. Moving into the contract under Section 3, when we talk about the use of the automobile, again, for the purposes of transparency, I would like to ask that the amount of insurance, an estimated maintenance cost, fuel expense, that also be made public. We know that it's part of the total package, so it should be included here. I understand that it's completely different from an allowance that would be identified as income and then reported on taxes, but it is a cost that the district will pick up, and I think it's important that everybody knows about it. Moving on to the renewal agreement. So this is the one that I'm the most curious about. So number 3 under Section 5, the ability of the board to take no action, and the contract automatic automatically renews, kind of like your cell phone or your cable bill. I don't think that's quite right. I don't think it would bode well for the board to take no action, so I'm encouraging you to have some further discussion about striking that clause because we want the board to take action. We want to know what you think, and I think it's appropriate to ask that that take place. Continuing through here, I know my time is ticking. Question under D. D, relocation expenses. Can you please explain to me, as someone who pays a mortgage and lives in the same house for 15 years or plus, what does residual, contractual, residential, transitional payment actually mean to us common folk? Moving on to the next page under annual leave, I notice, and we talked about, standardized 20 calendar days of vacation leave. What does standardized mean? Is that what 12-month administrators earn? I notice there's 20 vacation days, one day of sick per month, so that's 12, and then 6 days of personal leave, so that's 38 days of leave. That's a really good package. But if you can explain if the 12-month administrators receive that too, that would make me real happy to know that. And then finally, I will just say this. Pretty nice contract, pretty generous. I hope that when we bring the salary committee's proposal forward to the bargaining committees and we negotiate that we still have that generous spirit among us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Albert. Mr. Shane Story. Welcome, Mr. Story.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. So I had several questions about the contract as well, but somebody did reach out and touch base with me and kind of explain some of the concepts that I wasn't understanding. But I think the real message here is that I wasn't understanding them because we didn't have time to discuss or have a conversation about them. Mr. Colon's comment last time, the last school board meeting about the turnover rate and the shortage of superintendents, I did some research on that, found it to be absolutely true. 25% turnover rate with superintendents up from a year ago at 15%, so a 10% increase. So I definitely understand the sense of urgency when you have to fill a role of such a high level of importance. But I would say with that, we also need to take the time and consider public input. We have the district advisory council. We have committees. We have the union. I know that we don't always get along, but we try to. We do our best. But when I spoke last time, I was talking about how quickly things happen and when you rush to make decisions. And I did say, like, I trust you guys to make the decision, that you're making professional decisions that are in the best interest of the students and the community. But we have to take the time to talk to that community. And Ms. Haynes brought up a good point about making sure we take that time next time to do that as well. And there is a section in your policy that talks about the transition of superintendents. And I think that would be this would be a good time to maybe look at that policy. And at the end of that policy, maybe put something in. There will be at least one school board meeting to have public input before the decision is made. Because we scheduled this meeting pretty quickly. We could have had that conversation and then scheduled another meeting right after, especially if Dr. Balgam is not starting until July 1st. So some of the questions I did have that were answered were the portability of leave. I understand that's a common practice. Unless they've served at a university, that does not transfer. 32 days of leave that is accruable, but those 6 days, I think it was not sick, it was personal leave, does not accrue. So. I think that's good. We don't need to just keep piling on leave, especially when a superintendent doesn't take it, right? It's going to be very rare. And just, you know, my concern was with the portability of leave was kind of what happened with Dr. Fritz. We're left holding the bag if we're in a situation where we're paying, you know, I don't know the number, but 200-300 days of leave or something crazy like that because they've been in the profession for 30 years. So, again, I just think it's important that these are things that I was able to get answers from some people on the board and other people as well. And by doing research, but this is stuff that should occur in conversations with the community to take the time and explain what each of these things mean and how it's going to go into effect. So that way the community is not upset and the teachers that you employ aren't upset and that we are reducing that overall stress in the district and make it a better environment in the classroom. And that's really what it comes down to, right? When mommy and daddy are fighting, the kids are stressed at home, right? So let's just do it. I would urge you all to please do a better job. And I'm really looking forward, hopefully, to you guys coming into the classrooms next year and maybe shadowing some of these people and see how Dr. Balgam's leadership is affecting those classroom environments and kind of take note of that. So thank you very much for your time. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you, Mr. Story. All right, board, Ms. Haynes.
I'm going to start with one of the questions that Ms. Albert brought up. where she said the total of 38 days. So I just want to make sure that I'm reading this once. So Section G does say that there would be 20 calendar days. And so calendar days are not just business days. They're also counting weekends. So I will tell you, I transferred out of a 12-month position into this. And actually, my days were 18 days, and they weren't calendar days. They were actually business days that I earned as a 12-month employee, so that actually means I earned more as a 12-month employee than what she's getting, because hers are calendars including the weekend. But when you go down to Section I under personal leave, unless I'm reading this incorrectly, this is identical to what teachers get. So teachers earn, one sick leave day a month, and they can use six of them for personal leave, but it's not six above the one that they earn. The six comes out of their sick leave. And if I read this correctly, it says the superintendent shall receive 6 days per year for personal leave, which may not be accumulated year to year. And that's the way teachers are. It just automatically stays as their sick leave. Personal leave utilized shall be charged against the sick leave. So those 6 days are part of the sick leave days that she's earning in Section H, which is identical to what every employee actually in Volusia County gets. You know, we earn it as a sick leave day, but we are allowed to choose to take it as a personal. And I remember years ago, I think we started where you could only take 3 personal days, and anything beyond that you had to have, a note and, jump through hoops and it couldn't be wrapped around holidays and things like that. So it's actually not 38 days then, the way you look at this. This is actually only 32 days, where 6 of the 12 could be personal, but they would come out of the 6. So I just wanted to clear that up so that people understood, and that people understood that people that are in 12-month positions are basically earning 18 days right now, but they're business days that they can take. They're not calendar days. So this matches, actually she got a little shorted on the one part, but I mean it matches what's happening already. Yes. Yeah, but it's matching what our 12-month employees are getting. So I just wanted to clear that piece up. And then if somebody else wants to explain some of the other pieces, that's fine with me. But that part I wanted to be cleared up. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Would Mr. Doran explain what she asked? What was it? The residential?
Yes. Yeah, I'm looking for it. Hold on.
D, page 7 of 14.
Yeah. Dr. Balgamon presently has a lease in Broward County for her personal residence, and she is bound to pay out that lease for another, I don't know, I didn't get an exact, but I'm around 8 or 9 months. And so that would be one of the expenses associated with relocation. The net effect is she's going to pay out potentially, unless she can find a sublettor, she can sublease it.
Yeah, sure.
Unless she can do that, she's going to have to pay out the rest of her lease in order to come here. And so that would be part of the expenses associated. If she hasn't already spent the $5,500 with moving trucks and all that, I don't, I have no idea what her plan is, but that's what that is.
And board, I'll remind you, for Dr. Fritz, we did 8,000 temporary housing and 5,000 for moving. And so, she truly has those expenses because she did move that far down. And just to bring a little bit of clarity, she's bound to the lease until they're able to find someone else that the homeowners association would agree to. So arguably, if it takes them more than 3 months, it will cost her money. And that's not up to her. It's the building itself. And that's not even counting moving everything up. So that was the reason why we included that. And again, she doesn't know how quick they'll be able to find somebody to lease that. But I thought the amount at $5 was very fair, provided she's able to get out of there and someone else to get in there. Ms. Haynes?
Okay, so I just want to clarify. Regardless of if they're able to sublease it or lease it to someone in 2 months, the maximum amount we're giving her for this is just the $5,500.
Correct, and she has to submit receipts to the district for that, so it's not an automatic check, it's a reimbursement.
Right, because I didn't want people to hear that and say, oh, we're going to pay out 8 months. We're not paying out 8 months. And then on one of the other pieces, on the renewal agreement, I will honestly say that I actually agree with Ms. Albert on this piece. I'm perfectly happy with number one and number two, where the school board may vote to renew the superintendent's agreement for an additional term beyond the June 30th of 2025, or the school board may vote to decline to extend the current agreement beyond the June 30th, 2025, keeping in mind that that all has to be done a minimum of 90 days out, which is by March 31st of 2025, and I thank you, Mr. Doran, for putting a date in there. I personally don't like number three, because number three just says none of us are really being actively involved. We're just allowing it to roll over, and I think for the benefit of whoever's sitting here on the board, as well as the benefit of Dr. Balgobin, I think there should be discussion and not just an automatic renewal, because then it becomes an automatic renewal into this one-year cycle.
After the second time, it's one-year cycle. After the first time, it's 3 years.
Okay. But, I mean, why not just take some ownership and, you know, make a statement?
I think it's just, and just in case someone doesn't have the date fixated, I mean, to say, hey, this has to be on the agenda, who's in charge of making sure that, you know, it's on the agenda, that it comes up? With the pandemic and school starting, we don't know what our head is. I think it's just in case. That's how I took it, just in case someone... You know, before it was remarked that the chair needs to know. A lot of times the chair doesn't know. We may have a different school board attorney. He may not, or she may not know. The superintendent, I don't know, is going to bring it up. So I think it's a just-in-case safety net. I don't think any of us who are elected to be duly effective, efficient officers are going to let that happen, though. I can't imagine any of us purposely doing it. I think it's just a just-in-case.
And to go along with what you said, my immediate thought was, because we've learned, okay? but you know what? Learning is a good thing.
Funny, we're in the business of it.
We have learned.
Yeah. You know, we talked about a binder being put together for at any point in time, anytime a new school board member came in, you know, a new superintendent comes in, if there's a change in attorney, agency clerk, whatever, this binder being put together that would have those important dates, like right there at the front of it, you know, because here's your employees as a school board member are the superintendent and the school board attorney, and here's the dates that you need to know. You know, like this is when their contract started. This is when it ends. Here's what the expectation is, that a minimum of 90 days out. You know, here's what 90 days out looks like. I think, you know, we talked about it. We talked about it being put together. And I think it's very beneficial. And I think that needs to happen. And, you know, maybe more than one person be in charge of the information, like the agency clerk have it, the superintendent's office, you know, like administrative assistant have it, the school board administrative assistant have it, you know, maybe communications department has it, legal has it, like different people have it, because at any time we don't know who's going to change. But that way that information's there for whoever comes in.
Can I comment?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've advocated the same thing for principals, and I said it just again recently, that when they hire new employees, teachers, paras, office staff, that they also need a copy of the school calendar, what the times of beginning are, where the parking is, the rules and regulations, what the daily schedule is, who are the guidance counselors, and whoever one is. When evaluations are coming, everybody needs to know, and I think someone needs to be appointed at each campus. Someone needs to be appointed at our level, maybe at the cabinet level, so everyone knows it's that person's responsibility. Because if we allow it just to be, well, this is what we want, but no one takes ownership of it, it's just going to slip by. And I think that's what's happened in the past, which is why, you know, that's number three, is there a just in case.
Thank you. Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regard to what Ms. Haynes just said, I was thinking, I think the right time to do that might be at our organizational meeting, and when we always set a calendar, you know, for the next year, and then we can say, okay, and let's make sure on March 31st or whatever, we and the agency clerk would take notes, and this has to be on the agenda no later than that day. I mean, that's when we're all kind of talking about planning, and this way we can blame it on Aaron if it doesn't get done. We don't have to keep it out of our...
So, Board, I've confirmed with Dr. Balgobin, she's okay with removing that. So that will mean we will have a discussion, if that is okay, if we have nods, because it's on us now. Okay, so... so there is the...
And I also just wanted to commend the chair and Mr. Doran for their hard work. It isn't easy doing these kinds of things. It's a lot of back and forth. And it can be tenuous at times, but the good news is that you guys hammered it out and you worked it out, and I do like some of the language. I think it was needed, and it's good that it's in there. It's black and white now, so we all understand, and getting these dates in there, I think it's very, very good. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Right, so just to be clear, we will remove under Section 5, Number 3, and I think that, you know, one of the challenges that we had is we never knew when it was up, and so, of course, the question came up to me, why are you bringing up so early? So at least this sets those parameters, and so there is a timeline that everyone is aware of for that. All right, Ms. Cuthbert.
I'd like to address the vehicle transportation. Would Dr. Shanoff like to come up, if it's okay with the chair?
Go ahead.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Dr. Balgobin's automobile provided to her is the same automobile provided to the deputy superintendent, the assistant deputy superintendents, directors, Chief Newman, and everyone else, our mechanics, our trucks, our white fleet, our blue fleet. Where is all of those expenses posted? Do we have that in our just our files, or is it a public record?
So fleet maintains fleet in transportation. Maintains all of the maintenance records, parts used, labor hours. We don't necessarily publish that. We can. All of the regular maintenance on our white fleet is taken care of by our own folks. We do contract out some work to Boulevard Tire. but that is very narrow in scope. So, but yes, all of those costs are captured. In fact, when we did our white fleet audit, we ensured that now all of our white fleet, whether it resides in maintenance or in transportation, all of those costs, all of those services are captured in Transman, which is our fleet management software.
That include, for example, your automobile?
Yes.
Okay, so all of that is, so if Ms. Albert would like to find out how much that costs, she can look that up?
Absolutely.
Okay, and that's for anyone in the public can do that as well?
Yes, and we also track fuel, everything, yes.
Thank you, Dr. Shanna.
You're welcome.
Does anyone else have a question for Dr. Shanna? I just thought I'd share. You're not going to get another opportunity.
I just want to, like, clarify a piece of this, because when we were looking at having to upgrade some of the white fleet and we had Enterprise here and all of that, you know, we were all given a document that was several pages long, an Excel document that listed each vehicle, the year it was, how many miles it had on it, who it was assigned to, how many miles they had driven that, you know, like in a year's period of time. And so where I think we're at right now is, so Dr. Balgobin had a vehicle that, you know, she was driving as the deputy superintendent that she turned back in when she left, and she's coming back and we're going to pick up one. But I don't know that we can really put a price tag right now on what this is going to cost, because let's be honest, I mean, every time I drive past a gas station, the price has increased, you know, from morning to night, you know, so I'm
at it for $4.29 today. I just want to let everybody know.
you're lucky. But I think, you know, we're offering all of this to people that are in the cabinet or maintenance and people like that, and we have some requirements and restrictions on what they can and cannot do, and you know, she followed all of that before, so I'm all for transparency, everybody knows that, but I don't even know that we can put, and you know, and we had originally offered that to Dr. Fritz. We had offered him the same opportunity that everyone else has, including, like, I mean, there's techs even that are driving, you know, vans all, there are people that are driving our white fleet every day, all day long, and they park it, you know, at a school or at a hub or this or that, and we maintain all of those expenses and costs, tires, batteries, fuel for everyone. So I'm all about transparency. I just don't know what it would look like, and I don't even know what, if 1 year would tell you what the next year would look like, because it just depends on where you're going every day. And, you know, the mileage that's being put on it every day. And, you know, is it 3 years old now? And you've got to replace the battery. And that wasn't an expense the past year. So the thing with Dr. Fritz was, you know, he turned the vehicle back in and wanted the other. So, you know, that was part of his income. And so I don't really know how to correct, you know, how to be clear on that one. But I appreciate that, because, like I said, when we were moving into that, we got a full doc. I mean, we could tell you Greg Aiken only drove this many miles, you know, that year. Or, you know, and some of them, because there were rules even that in order to have a vehicle, you needed to drive a certain number of miles in a year. And if you weren't driving it, then it was like, go back to your vehicle. And we had a few people that were that way. So I just don't know how to give everybody the answers to this right now. What happens?
In the event that you need that information, it is all captured in our fleet management system.
Thank you, Ms. Burnett.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. I was going to suggest exactly what you did with the organizational dates. I think that would be great for all of us to have at that meeting. And I only had one other question, and that was on the medical. Are we giving a date for that to be completed by? Like a hard date?
The hard date would be July 1. It has to be done before her first day of work.
And not that I'm concerned, but I remember hearing some confusion.
There was a lot of confusion.
Some prior situations.
That won't happen again.
Okay.
Curiosity question.
Sure.
Will she have to be fingerprinted again?
Mark?
On what, month or two?
She's worked. What was that, Mr.? I don't know. That's HR policy.
All right. Thank you, Mr. West.
Okay. Just want to speak a little bit about the document. You know, we went back and forth, and it was very, very, you know, thank you to Mr. West and Stephanie Workman, and we went every which way to try to be as clear as possible, and there's, you know, several iterations, and, you know, without it being a book, when we spoke of the dependent coverage, that arguably I would say that could read dependent, but that would not have meant a whole lot to a lot of folks. And so until we got to the meeting today, it would have been a little bit difficult to explain that. And then the vehicle allowance. So Dr. Fritz received $700 a month for a vehicle allowance, whether he drove 1 mile or he drove, you know, a million miles. That was his choice. That was something the board agreed upon. And so, you know, that does constitute income because it is income. And so that, to me, is not likened to driving the district vehicle. Although, yes, I agree, there is an expense to the district vehicle. However, that is not something that is typically tagged to the income of anybody who drives it in the district, so we wouldn't do the same there. There was the question about the relocation expenses we talked about. We talked about annual leave. And again, you know, the other thing I'll remind everyone is we probably saved ourselves, you know, $25,000, $30,000 on not doing another superintendent search. And so in the back of that, my mind, that also sits in that. And not only that, but the institutional and community relations and knowledge and all of that. I mean, it'll take someone a whole year to even get where Dr. Balgobin's coming in. So I think we'll have that's also an opportunity there if you want to talk about cost savings. So does anybody else have anything else? Do we have any more public comment cards? Hearing none, board, you have heard the, actually we would need a re-motion because we have amended to remove Section 3, providing clarity in 1 and 2 for those time frames as to when those conversations are to be had. So, Ms. Cuthbert?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to withdraw my original motion and put in another motion to accept our contract as negotiated and amended with Dr. Balgobin as presented this evening.
Thank you. Board, you've heard the motion. Do we have a second? Motion's been properly made and seconded by Ms. Cuthbert. With any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. Welcome back to Volusia County, Dr. Balgobin. So Dr. Balgobin could not be here today, but we do have a message from Dr. B.
Good evening, Volusia, my home away from home. I want to first begin by thanking God for his ongoing love and guidance in my life. To our school board members, Chairman Colon, Mr. Persis, Mrs. Cuthbert, Ms. Burnett, and Ms. Haynes, thank you for your vote of confidence and belief in me. It is something that I don't take lightly. As you know, I believe in a quality public education where access and opportunities are provided to all students. I am the product of such a system. My father made many, many personal sacrifices because he believed that knowledge, skills, and quality experiences are perhaps the most important gifts that you can provide to any learner. His sacrifices paid off, and I'm here to confirm that belief. With that said, we will continue to work together as a team with our staff to rightfully ensure Volusia is at the forefront as we provide quality learning experiences for all students. Our students certainly deserve a world-class education. Our strategic plan is merely a roadmap to our vision, mission, and goals. Most importantly, it's the people behind the scenes who makes it all come through with the right guidance and support. I am grateful for the extraordinary leadership and commitment of our cabinet members and all district and school-based personnel, our administrators, teachers, support staff, and the operational division is truly a representation of what we have accomplished and what is yet to be done. I am so thankful to each of you for your ongoing belief and support. You have stayed in touch with me and continue to voice your belief and support continuously. So thank you. We are stronger together. To all of our partners in education, parents, and members in our community, thank you again for reaching out to me and for voicing your support. We will continue to work together for our student success. I know that we all want Volusia to be successful. That is also my goal. Ms. Rachel Hazel, you are a servant leader, one of the qualities I very much admire about you among many, many others. Thank you for taking the helm and keeping it going. To our union presidents, the work continues, and I look forward to a collaborative, healthy, and respectful partnership in the future. Last but not least, my amazing family. Thank you always for your unconditional support. I know that my dad, who's not physically here, is also watching over me. I will see you soon. And don't think for a second that in the meanwhile, Ms. Hazel's not keeping me busy.
Great.
Thank you so much, Dr. B. So with that being said, any other comments? There's, I see tears. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Hey.